And now, with over 25 years of experience integrating mental health and spirituality, the author of Reclaiming Authenticity, When Ancestors Weep, and Redeeming the Bereaved, here is Dr. James Houck.
Good evening, everybody, or wherever you are in the world at this time. Welcome to Reclaiming Authenticity, reclaiming that which has always been in you. I'm Dr. James Houck, and if you would like more information about me, or maybe you would like to leave me your comments about tonight's show, just invite you to visit the website there. It's www.bbsradio.com/Reclaiming Authenticity. That's all one word. So www.bbsradio.com/Reclaiming Authenticity. And if you'd like to be part of the show, then just invite you to call in. That number is 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. And just a little reminder that these broadcasts focus on the integration of spirituality and mental health, which are really not exclusive, of each other, but rather they find a holistic integration, shall we say, in people's lives. But, you know, there is one caveat here, that in order for this integration of spirituality and mental health to result in transformation in a person's life, it has to be placed within the context of our relationships, the relationship that we have with ourselves, the relationship that we have with others, and our relationship with God or the divine. And it is certainly my great pleasure to be with you here tonight. And I will be taking your calls in the second half of the show tonight. And I encourage you to call into the show because I'd like to get your take on today's subject, the shards of illusion, seeing from the soul. Well, how is your heart today? Speaking of hearts, I hope it is well wherever you are, that you are safe and happy, and that your heart is at peace. So here we are at the end of March, or, you know, coming up soon, a couple more days. You know, on Saturday would be April 1st. And I don't know about anybody else, but the month of March just went by so fast. But that's the way it is. And again, we are in spring. So welcome to spring. And hopefully you are enjoying a mild temperature where you are. If not, hang in there. It's coming. Well, let's start things off tonight. Just a little reminder. There's an ancient African proverb out there. I'm sure that everybody has heard it. And it takes a village to raise a child. It takes a village to raise a child. In other words, the survival of any person extends beyond the immediate family. And regardless of nationality or creed or race, we are more connected to one another than what we realize. And yet, you know, think about it, just as it takes many to contribute to the development of a generation of children, history has often shown us that it also takes a village to hide scandals, abuses, and atrocities, because no one person or entity acts alone. And again, history has shown us that no secret remains hidden. The truth never stays buried. And yes, dead men and women and children do tell tales of how they died. You know, some died of natural causes, some died at the hands of others, and some people were not even considered worthy to be buried, respectively. But for all of these atrocities and more, it is time for us to begin telling the stories not on how they died, but rather how they lived. You see, it's time for us to see them for who they are, that is, souls. Souls that live on after their hearts have stopped beating and their brain waves ceased. Souls that surround us like this great cloud of witnesses, or communion of the saints, if that's your belief. And our ancestors speak to us constantly through the blood that runs through our veins. We certainly have a blood-soul connection to them. Yet, how do we reconcile these events with what we do today? You know, and this is where my work has come in terms of, you know, healing intergenerational trauma, because ironically, trauma has the potential to disconnect us from who we are as souls. And the reason for this is, and this is all a perception here, the reason for this is because unhealed emotional wounds or psychological wounds or physical pain or spiritual wounds places a distorted template over our perceptions. In other words, trauma says to us, this is all there is, and this is all there is to you. This is as good as it's going to get, so you can just lower all your expectations. But these are all lies and distortions that come from other wounded people who have yet to embrace themselves as a soul. But you know, and you know, once we embrace ourselves as a soul, once we catch that glimpse of this is who we are at our very core being, we're going to be astonished to see the power of our soul to not only transcend trauma and transform our wounded energy, but also it's going to empower others to do the same. But still, you know, as history teaches us, many have feared the resiliency and power of the soul and therefore have tried to silence its cry. Well, I was reading an article earlier this week by one of the leading trauma experts in the field today, Bessel van der Kolk. I'm sure you've just Google his name, and he's written many, many things. He's just well known. And Bessel van der Kolk notes that the human response to psychological trauma is one of the most important public health problems in the world. And tragic events such as family and social violence, rape and assaults, disasters, wars, accidents, and predatory violence confront people with such horror and threat that it may temporarily or even permanently alter their capacity to cope. You know, their biological threat to perception and their concepts of themselves. Traumatized individuals frequently develop post-traumatic stress disorder, PTSD, okay? A disorder in which the memory of the traumatic event comes to dominate a victim's consciousness and depleting their lives of meaning and pleasure. And we don't have to look too far in the news because certainly, hopefully, you are aware of the tragedy that took place in Nashville earlier this week. And just, you know, there's now this big, long search for the answers. Like, how could this happen? Just how bad was the shooter suffering? Was there a mental health illness? You know, just all those questions there. And why did this person feel the need to go into the school? And so on and so forth. And we may not have the answers to those questions. And that's, you know, that can be very traumatic in and of itself. It just doesn't make sense. You know, like as human beings, we long for some sort of closure. And even though we may have the answers to some sort of tragedy, it's not going to bring back our loved ones. And that's something that we have to come to terms with in as part of our healing and so forth. But hopefully those who are involved will be able to piece together the questions that are on everybody's hearts and minds. But please, speaking of hearts and minds, before you go to bed tonight, if you haven't done so already, just ask that you would pray for Nashville in general, in terms of, you know, the people who are employed at the school, the students, the teachers, you know, faculty, staff, all that, as well as the first responders, you know, the police officers, the EMTs, even in local hospitals, you know, just everybody, that they just need that extra special compassion and understanding during this time. Well, there's another advocate in trauma studies out there, Chinnery, and he notes that children and adults who experienced, you know, a prolonged period in terms of, you know, months to years of chronic victimization and total control by others may also experience the following difficulties. You know, in other words, difficulties in emotional regulation, which may include persistent sadness or suicidal thoughts, explosive anger or inhibited anger. In other words, like, you know, you get angry, but you're just not given the permission to be able to share that. And so you swallow it and it's bouncing around inside of you. And he also says that, you know, another difficulty is in consciousness. That includes forgetting traumatic events or reliving traumatic events or having episodes in which one feels detached from, you know, the mental processes or even the body, you know, in terms of like a dissociation. And then there's also difficulties with self-perception, which may include a person taking on a sense of helplessness or shame or guilt or stigma and a sense of being completely different from other human beings. You know, where do I fit? I don't feel like I fit anymore. Who am I? I don't know. I just know that I feel bad and I don't know what to do with all of this because where do I fit? And so forth. And then there's also distorted perceptions of the perpetrator. You know, examples include attributing total power to the perpetrator or becoming preoccupied with the relationship to the perpetrator or preoccupied with revenge. Okay, these just all fall under these distorted perceptions. And then there's relations with others, which include isolation or a sense of distrust or a repeated search for a rescuer. You know, and this goes right back into like a learned helplessness, you know, but certainly somebody who isolates or has a major sense of just distrust of others. And then finally, Chenery notes that, you know, the other difficulties, last one is one's system of meaning. In other words, it, you know, people may just have just a loss of sustaining faith or a sense of hopelessness and despair, or as I would say, a lot of shattered assumptions, okay, whereby we thought things would be different. We thought we would be protected. We thought this would happen to somebody else. But when something happens to us, now what? Now what do I believe? And so forth. Well, I'm certain all of us have heard the expression, hurt people hurt people. And ironically, this is where emotional and psychological self-inflicted wounds come from. And if you've been following me for some time, you know I've been talking about this for a while, you know, these self-inflicted wounds. And this is what I mean, in case you're hearing me for the first time, that we think that if we say something harmful or we do something harmful, that it's never going to come back on us. You know, we can just do something to somebody or say something very hateful and hurtful and then walk away thinking that I'm good. But that's the distortion. It will come back on us. Every negative thought, every negative thing we say, every negative thing we do does come back to us, often reinforcing the wounded parts of ourselves. Now, it's kind of like I explained to kids, you know, who just don't get these abstract terms. You know, just think of it this way. How many of you have been in a tunnel or a cave and you've shouted, hello, and then you hear that echo coming back to you? It's the same thing with our thoughts, our words, and our actions. And we have many different ways to be able to describe this concept of these emotional and psychological self-inflicted wounds. You know, there's sayings out there such as, well, you know, what goes around comes around. Or, you know, what you sow, you will reap. And even karma is another way to understand that no matter how you say it, humanity lives in this echo, that what goes out from us will return to us, just like we hear the sound of our voice echoing back in our ears when we're in a tunnel or that cave. You know, and everything we think and say and do is energy. And unless we transform the energy through healing our own wounds, it will come back to us exactly how it went out from us. And you know, this is a phenomenon that I run into time and time and time again, counseling clients who want to heal from their past and improve their relationships. You know, most of the time they just, I just want to feel better, you know, or I keep making the same mistakes, or I don't know why I can't stay married. I don't know why I sabotage relationships. I don't know why I can't get along with people. Well, it's interesting that, you know, I found that whenever a person or whatever a person is struggling with from other relationships, you know, more than likely is struggling with the same issue in themselves. And this is what I mean, that whatever negative energy is being sent out echoes back sooner or later. Okay. So a person who is filled with bitterness from, let's say, a previous hurt or betrayal, unless that's healed, more than likely, they're going to view everything and feel everything from that lens and that weight of bitterness. And a person who has experienced tremendous hurt from broken trust in relationships, unless that is healed and transformed, more than likely will view everything and everyone with suspicion. And this is very difficult for people to understand about the phenomena of emotional and psychological self-inflicted wounds. What goes out has first come from within. And you know, you might have heard somebody say, or maybe you even said it, that, you know, I'm never going to forgive that person for, which translates into, I will never be able to forgive myself for, or I can never trust another person. More than likely means I have difficulty trusting myself. It's just easier to put the blame out on others. Or what about, I just can't stand it when a person says or does this. More than likely means I can't stand myself when I say or do this, no matter how hard and how much I justify it. Or lastly, I just can't love that person because, just might mean I also struggle with loving myself. You know, how we are with others is often how we are with ourselves, and vice versa. How we see others is how we see ourselves. Unresolved and unhealed wounds really distort how we view and interact with the world. So, now, if you've ever seen the movie Frozen, then perhaps you're aware that the movie is a take or a variation of Hans Christian Andersen's children's story, The Snow Princess, which I think he penned back in 1845, you know. Don't worry, I'm not going to break out in song, okay, because I don't want you to go to bed tonight with that song just running through your head, even though it probably has already started. Anyway, so yeah, in Andersen's story, The Snow Princess, you know, he writes about this evil troll, which is actually the devil. And he, I don't know where he got this, but he got a very large magic mirror, like one of those funhouse mirrors at carnivals. Okay. And this mirror is, he uses to distort the appearance of everything that it reflects. In fact, this mirror was just not designed to reflect, you know, the wholesome and beautiful aspects of people and things. But instead, it only magnified their ugly and wicked characteristics. So throughout the story, this troll, the devil, becomes amused in distorting the images of everyone and everything, to the degree that even the most beautiful lands look like boiled spinach. Well, one day, the troll, aka the devil, with the help of his minions, they want to carry this mirror into heaven so that they might make fools of the angels and God. However, and this is the irony, however, as they're going up to heaven, you know, they're flying away, the mirror slips from their grasp and falls back to earth, shattering into millions and millions of pieces. And these tiny shards of mirror are then blown by the wind all over the earth, which get into people's eyes and their hearts. And as a result, people's hearts become frozen, like ice. And their eyes can only now see ugliness and evil in each other and the world in which they live. Well, you know, ironically, our past wounds are just like the shards of distorted perceptions of who we truly are as souls, as well as what freezes our hearts from seeing the beauty and goodness in ourselves and others. And for people who are struggling with intergenerational wounds, who have suffered crimes against humanity, you know, society has often held up its own mirrors of misleading standards, sometimes intentionally, sometimes unintentionally. But nevertheless, these shards of illusion are intentionally designed to add generational distortions to the eyes and the hearts of the weak and the wounded. And over time, then, our minds tell us that what we perceive, albeit limited and hazy, well, it must be true. Now, I often share with clients my own personal philosophy and of how and why I work with people the way that I do. And it really comes from two deep-seated beliefs that I really cherish within myself. And the first one is that I believe that people have the answers for their problems within themselves, meaning that they know the kind of life they want to live, what brings them happiness and joy and peace and contentment, and they know what does not. And the second is that I believe that from the moment we are born, and then some, we have everything we need for this life in terms of our talents and our skills and gifts and graces and personalities and strengths and so on and so forth, the very best parts of who we are. And yet, there are times when we go through horrific experiences, such as being in the wrong place at the wrong time, and we suffer some traumatic experience, or we struggle, again, with making the same mistakes or the bad habits that we struggle to kick, that we have never properly dealt with or healed from, or we struggle to make sense out of our own issues that have been handed down through our family line, you know, through the stories that have been told to us in a certain way. Well, nevertheless, these issues and the pain that they entail often keep us from living the life that we want to live, as well as keeping the very best of ourselves from coming out. You know, there's that distorted template again, the shards of illusion. And as a result, we often live our lives from a place of woundedness and pain instead of from a place of healing, wholeness, and love and who we are as souls. Now, ironically, we often receive our deepest emotional, psychological, physical, even spiritual wounds as a result of being in relationships with one another. You know, this is, you know, really the irony of life. And whether the wounding was intentional or accidental, it is what we do afterwards, once we have been wounded, or perhaps that we have wounded another person, that will either reinforce those wounds or find a way to transform those wounds to be free from those burdens. And yet, in order to find our healing, in order to find our strength, our voice, we need to be in healthier relationships in order to heal from damaged emotions and wounded spirits and the lack of emotional and psychological support. And you know what? We are, let's say, the author of our destiny. We are very much capable of being in healthier relationships, because as we heal, it allows others to heal. But you know, when people's deep wounds are not healed, those wounds actually become vortexes of troubled waters, intertwined with their own instinct of survival and fear. And according to Park, a gentleman, a theologian, a scholar, a philosopher, he just says many victims instinctively synchronize their wavelengths with the offenders. In other words, they identify with them. They internalize their perpetrator's images and values, And then they externalize them in treating their own victims. In other words, they see the world through their oppressor's eyes. But then seeing again through their own eyes begins the healing process. And, you know, in severe cases, trauma can be passed down genetically, and it attaches itself to our DNA, and often covertly disguises itself as harmful physical, psychological, emotional, and even spiritual symptoms. And similarly, as intergenerational trauma is passed down through society and families, in other words, what we carry in our genes or how and are we were raised, various social systems often galvanize harmful stereotypes or prejudices or injustices, emotional dependence and biases and so forth. And as a result, intergenerational trauma is not just limited to how it affects our families, but it does affect all relationships, from the most intimate to the mere acquaintances in our lives. We are that connected to each other. But you know, this realization is a significant aspect of our healing relationships. It occurs when we can understand what has so wounded another person and what has so wounded ourselves as to allow us to continually act out of our woundedness, and yet we want to expect different results. Again, this is where people would say, why do I keep making the same mistakes? Why do I feel like I keep sabotaging relationships and so on and so forth? Well, we're acting out of our woundedness. Nothing has healed. Nothing has changed, but yet we expect different results. And, you know, I have to say from personal experience that by understanding the background, the lives of those who have hurt me, it's actually allowed me to take the necessary steps for me and take the necessary steps closer to forgiving and releasing the burdens of carrying around my wounds any longer. And the same is true whenever we forgive another person. We're, in a sense, what we're doing is we're telling them that we no longer want them to carry the weight of their wounds. We want them to also be unburdened by any weight of bitterness or unforgiveness, shame or humiliation, or, you know, whatever pain they may have suffered from in the past that continues to influence how they think and say and act in very harmful ways. Well, I would really love to hear your heart on these matters. So again, if you would like to call in, that number is 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. And I'll be taking your calls after the break. Again, you are listening to Reclaiming Authenticity, and I'm your host, Dr. James Houck. I'll be back with you in 1 minute. Okay, welcome back. I'm Dr. James Houck, and you are listening to Reclaiming Authenticity. Well, if you're just joining me in this second half of the show, I just kind of bring you up to speed here with everybody else that earlier in the show, I was talking about where emotional and psychological self-inflicted wounds come from. In other words, that we think that if we say something harmful or we do something harmful, that it's never going to come back on us. But it certainly does. I mean, just think about your own life here. You know, every negative thought, every negative thing that we say, every negative thing we do is going to come back on us or come back to us in one degree or another, in one fashion or another, often reinforcing the wounded parts of ourselves. So in other words, that when we start looking at, you know, the same mistakes we keep making over and over again, and why can't we improve in our relationships with one another? And why do we stay, you know, wounded? Why can't we find our healing? Take a look at your relationships. How do you treat others is certainly how we treat ourselves. And again, you know, this is no secret, but we have many ways to understand this kind of a concept. You know, we say things like what goes around comes around, what you sow, you're going to reap, and even karma is another way to understand that no matter how you say it, humanity lives in an echo, that whatever goes out from us will return to us, just like we hear the sound of our voice echoing back in our ears when we're in a tunnel or a cave. Okay. And as I shared, you know, right before the break, that kids love this analogy. They are right on board with me whenever I, you know, use an analogy that could, because they get it. They understand the echo. It's just something cool where, you know, they have to, you know, if their mom and dad are driving and they go through a tunnel, they're like, oh yeah, hit the horn, because they want to hear the horn echo back. Same principle. And they understand that completely, you know, because everything we think and say and do is energy. And unless we transform the energy through healing our own wounds, it's going to come back to us exactly as it went out from us. So how do we transform negative energy? It really begins with healing ourselves. And to take this concept to the heart of the matter, so to speak, the way we find healing is to begin asking ourselves, who am I really? Beneath all the external facades, beneath all the pretense and outward appearances, who are we at our core? You know, my one of my teachers is often fond of saying that that most people think that any undesirable situation is due to the behavior of others. In other words, it's not my fault. So, you know, they don't want to accept responsibility for their own thoughts, words, and or actions. And furthermore, this perspective is clearly the result of the mind's doings. Okay, and you've heard me say this before, but we are our own worst enemies. We can talk ourselves in and out of things all the time. And this is certainly true. It's like, well, I don't like this situation, but it's not my fault. You know, don't put the blame on me. And, you know, it's simply caused by the weakness of the mind and the absorption of negative thoughts. Because how many times throughout any given day are we bombarded with negativity through negative lyrics and music, or just negative music, you know, and just what's, you know, not relaxing, or negative campaigns or negative news, you know, media, social media, and so forth. We're just constantly bombarded. And that gets into our thoughts. That gets into our heads, gets into our hearts. You know, for example, if you think you are weak, if you told you are weak and you start to think that you're weak, you're really going to become weak. And if you think that you're a victim, if you think that you've always been a victim, then more than likely you're going to stay a victim. But if you think of yourself as being strong, then you are strong. If you think of yourself being resilient, then you're resilient, and so forth. But you know, most people have accepted their inner weaknesses to the point that they are really attached to them. And they don't want to come out of these self-centered or self-created illusions. And this is all the more reason why we have to be careful with our thoughts, our words, and our deeds. And speaking of energy, you know, I don't know if you're aware that a single thought can generate about 4 volts of energy. You know, this was something that was studied way back in the 1950s, 60s, and 70s. So a single thought, just a single thought, can generate 4 volts of energy. You know, not to mention everything else our brains send energy signals to. You know, 4 volts of energy per thought. Now, compare this to a AA or a AAA battery, which is about 1.5 volts. So when we speak our thoughts, that number of energy, you know, it jumps from 4 volts of energy to about 40 volts or 10 times the amount just by speaking our thoughts. And this could be negative, positive. It's just speaking our thoughts. The energy increases 10 times. Now, again, let's put this into perspective. The amount of voltage required to start a car battery is usually somewhere around 12.6. Okay, and you consider we're giving voice to our thoughts, and that's 40 volts of energy. We can do a lot of damage with our words, or we can do a lot of healing with our words. But you know, basically, our brains run on chemical energy from Aden oocine triphosphate. There we go. That's a mouthful. Just like other parts of the body. And we know many of the things it does in the brain. And apparently, the biggest thing that this triphosphate does is that it runs the molecular pumps, so to speak, that simultaneously pump sodium out of the neurons and the potassiums in, creating and maintaining a chemical, let's just call it a gradient across the neuron cell, and so forth. And this is happening just at lightning speed all the time. So let's just stay with the notion that our thoughts are energy. And, you know, just as we just a single thought of energy, just a single thought carries about 4 volts of energy. But if we speak those thoughts, positive or negative, it jumps to about 10 times. Now, if we take that same single thought and we write it down on paper, the amount of energy jumps even higher to 50 times more. That's a lot of energy. Now, the reason for this is because at that point, when we're starting to write things down, writing our thoughts down, we have engaged the head, the heart, and the hand. In other words, thoughts, words, and deed. That's a significant amount of energy, which not only goes for negative thoughts, but also positive thoughts as well. And the more we do this exercise, the more aware we will become of our thought patterns and words and behaviors that are communicated in our relationships. We realize where our thoughts take us in any given moment, in any given day. Be aware of your thoughts. Write them down. Different times during the day, just like you have a thought about something, write it down and keep writing it down. And, you know, do that for some time. Do that for many, many days. And you'll start to see patterns of your thoughts and where your thoughts take you. Because, you know, maybe by looking at ourselves more closely and examining our motives and our assumptions and limited perspectives, hopefully we just might realize the first steps towards lasting transformation. And therefore, we can acknowledge these illusions of oppression and limited understanding actually starts in our minds. In other words, you know, a person could be in a physical prison, but if they find their true nature, that they are an eternal soul, then no amount of earthly limitation can convince them that they are limited, inadequate, or restricted. You know, my India friends understand that people are already in a relationship with all things, okay, and all people, including God, but they just don't know it yet. you know, they tell me many times, you're always already in relationship with all things. Embrace all things, for you are already connected to them. You know, and we've had some wonderful conversations, you know, and therefore it's a matter of realizing again that we are souls and that our souls are vast and formless. Our bodies are physical. Our bodies are form. Our bodies are limited. Our souls are vast and formless and eternal. In fact, I've talked with my friends in India, and we've had, you know, many an interesting conversation about sin and ignorance. And whereas others see sin in people as being bad or evil, they believe that people just simply act out of ignorance of who they truly are, and therefore commit evil acts because they have not realized themselves and others as souls. You know, echoing this statement, another one of my teachers, Joseph Rael, beautiful painted arrow, in a recently published book entitled Becoming Medicine, Pathways of Initiation into Living Spirituality. I'll say that again in case you want to write it down. Becoming Medicine, Pathways of Initiation into Living Spiritually. He wrote, the way you become a medicine person is you practice who you really are, because you are already medicine. No one gives it to you. You are already it. And you know, what a gift to yourself and to your family and to the world when you realize that you are already medicine for others. Therefore, our job is just have to, you know, we work on clearing out everything that gets in the way of that medicine in terms of our unresolved emotional, psychological, physical, spiritual woundedness. And we have to work on our relationships that have occurred in the past. We have to work on resolving our differences, our pain, bitterness, our egos, and our forgiveness. And I'm convinced that in order for us to fully embrace ourselves as medicine for ourselves and others, we must first come to terms with everything that has brought us to even this very moment in our lives. Good, bad, positive, negative, whatever label you want to put on it. Everything that we have experienced has brought us to this very moment in our lives. In fact, there's so much more to us than what we have become so far, and that is what reclaiming authenticity is all about. Finding your courage to reclaim that which has always been in you. How does your medicine come out from your thisness, your uniqueness, your hachetas? In other words, if you are a plumber, how do you demonstrate your medicine through your thisness? If you work in IT, how do you demonstrate your medicine through your thisness? If you are a singer, how do you demonstrate your medicine through your thisness as a singer? And herein lies a great lesson that we all need to learn regarding recognizing who we are as souls. You know, on this level, there are, you know, illusions and beliefs that pretty much have been superimposed that, you know, that says to us that all we are is a particular body with a set of feelings and thoughts and taking in the external world around us. And so what we see is just, that's it, you know, and ours is a world whereby we are familiar with superimposed images all the time. We get that. You know, because basically to superimpose means to place or lay over or above something on another image. And if you're a photographer out there, you know, you're familiar with this term, and maybe you even use this technique all the time. You just superimpose an image. And now if you're in the music business, it's also called overdubbing, which is also known as layering, which is a technique used in which audio tracks that have been pre-recorded are then played back and incorporated into another track. Whenever I think about overdubbing, I want to think of the Beatles, because they've done this all the time, you know, in their music and so forth. Okay? But when we believe that there is nothing more to us than flesh and blood, a body and mind, or that we define ourselves according to our wounds, our scars, and our experiences, we're reinforcing this template or this superimposition of this illusion. Now, removing this illusion and realizing the underlying reality is called de-superimposition. Okay? And one of my favorite stories that was actually told to me by a Sikh guru is looking for the butter in every bowl of milk. And again, if you've been following this broadcast, you've heard me share this story many times. It's a pretty cool story, which may seem like a strange story, you know, a strange title for a story. But when you think about it, you go to the grocery store, okay? Most people have on their list to buy milk and butter and cheese, okay? Nothing's changed over the years. Those are staples. And of course, there are other dairy products such as yogurt, cottage cheese, and so forth. But have you ever really stopped to take a closer look at a glass of milk? Have you? Well, next time, do it. Because as you're looking at this glass of milk, look carefully, and are you able to see the butter and the cheese that's already in it? It's true. Butter and cheese do exist in milk. But where is it? You know, those things certainly cannot be perceived, but they're present everywhere in milk. In each and every drop, each and every glass. I mean, in fact, there's no particle of milk where butter or ghee is not present. And this is a great analogy or a great metaphor for how we are able to see God and the potential in ourselves and others in everyday life. Well, little did I realize after hearing this story for the first time just how important it is for us to understand that the presence of God or the divine can be seen in everybody, especially ourselves, in everyday life. You know, on the surface, we might find this teaching just a little hard to swallow, no pun intended, or difficult, because when we look at ourselves or when we look at others, maybe all we see is just so much physical pain or emotional wounds or psychological suffering, or expressions of anger and violence, or lust and jealousy and brokenness, and on and on and on. But can we also see the potential for God's presence to transform these wounds into life-giving means of creating the healing we truly want to see in this world? In other words, can we see the potential for the milk to be transformed into butter and cheese? Let alone, how can we transform dimensions of higher spiritual awareness that we desire? I mean, but really, do we see the potential in ourselves? Do we see ourselves as more than just the body? Do we see ourselves as souls which are limitless and vast? And yet, how many times do we struggle with seeing God in this world because we're unwilling or unable to shift our focus? Or maybe, truth be told here, perhaps we're too busy to quiet ourselves and to listen for God's still small voice. Or let's take this one step further. How many times do we wrongly assume that in order to see God first, we must first make God conform to our vision, our philosophy, our worldview, our prayers? But in other words, if God wants a relationship with me, then it's going to have to be on my terms. And this is just, sorry, that's not how it's going to work. This is simply not the case. But you see, God is not akin to a genie in Aladdin's lamp. I mean, we don't obtain these things simply by rubbing the spiritual lamp, hoping to get three wishes. So how do we see God more clearly? How do we love God more dearly, and how do we follow God more nearly each day? Yes, I'm quoting from Day by Day and Godspell, but let me propose this idea. Perhaps before we ask the question, how, Perhaps a better question would be for us to first understand from where inside the soul do these desires come from? You know, perhaps the desire to see and love and follow God actually comes from a deep place in us that words cannot express. Maybe we just don't have the language for it, but it's a churning in us. It's a yearning in us. These are deep, 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 deep desires. You see, as we heal from our psychological, emotional, physical, and spiritual wounds, we're going to begin to look at ourselves and others differently. It is inevitable. And this is a very good beginning. This is a great beginning. However, when we're able to see what we are truly made of, that is, we're made of light, soul, we begin to understand the true meaning of seeing the butter and cheese in the bowl of milk or the glass of milk. It may not be there at first glance, but as we develop our relationship with God or the divine, we heal from those woundedness. And here's the irony in all of this. When we are truly able to see ourselves as souls, and ultimately, when we're able to realize ourselves as souls, and we begin to see others as souls, we are no longer willing to accept relating to people as anything less than them also being souls. How many times do we hear and see people calling for an end to violence, crime, and poverty? I mean, humanity has always struggled with these issues, but has never looked for answers in the right places. I mean, all too often, the focus has been on the externals, you know, that which has caused, you know, these divisions in humanity, let's say, since the beginning of measured time. And we get right down to it. It's when we look at the externals, all of these have done nothing but produce the isms in the world. Sexism, racism, ageism, classism, egoism, and so forth. But when we focus on the soul of the person, all of these isms fall away because they simply cannot follow the language of the soul. Because the soul is always found by looking inward. There is no more sexism. There is no more racism. There is no more ageism. There is no more egoism. Because isms do not have a voice in the matters of the soul. We're all beautiful souls, made in the image of God, and full of inherent value and dignity and worth. Yet, we may struggle to accept this truth because, again, our attention is diverted to focus solely on outward appearances and behaviors. And in other words, we all live with some degree of ignorance of our soul consciousness. Well, you know, we're going to get glimpses of it, but we may never attain the full extent because the physical, emotional, psychological issues really cloud our vision or distort our vision of who we truly are. Well, I'm Dr. James Houck, and you have been listening to Reclaiming Authenticity. Thank you for spending this hour with me. And if you'd like to go back and listen to this broadcast again, I just invite you to go on the website, the www.bbsradio.com/reclaiming authenticity. And once you get on that webpage, then just look for the archives, and then you can find probably in a day or so this particular broadcast, as well as other broadcasts that you might be interested in. So again, thank you for spending this hour with me. It has been a real pleasure. And please drop me a line and let me know what you think. And we will talk again in 2 weeks. So everybody take care and be blessed.
For an answer, or just to leave 1,000 comments, or prodding around to buy a book by Dr. Houck, it's all there. Just wander over to ReclaimingAuthenticity.com and click around. and we'll see you next Wednesday at 9 p.m. Eastern Time, 6 p.m. Pacific, on BBS Radio TV.